Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Everybody, welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tailford, joined by Rich Hudson.
Hello.
And Rachel Shackleton.
I thought you were going to say Rach Hudson there.
Why not? I was there thinking, which way is he going to go first?
Hybridize all things. So it's been a little bit of mental week for news.
Yeah.
There's many, many things going on. So I sort of cherry-picked stuff that we haven't done full videos on, but I'll mention some stuff that we have done across the week too.
Mm-hmm.
But did you guys know that there's a new PS5 IP being in development? And there's the staff members are both Rockstar, and Naughty Dog.
Yeah, brand new first-party studio,
yeah.
Isn't it?
So it's like
somewhere.
Sony, I don't know, gearing up to do the biggest, like, drop something massive alongside the PS5. But what do you guys think of the PS5 in general? And, like, do you think they're going to come out the gate with just new franchises, new IP?
I think that would make a lot of sense, I think. Because I think if you try to sell a console on a sequel, like, you'll get so much, like, hype around it based on who's actually played the previous one. Whereas if you're going to do something completely new and make it look really good, that would draw a lot of people in. Mm-hmm. But I think that sounds about right.
I mean, I like, things like Horizon, like, Last of Us is obviously, like, a massive deal. Like, I'm glad that... I mean, the name of the two dudes... it was James Martin Scheck from Red Dead Redemption 2 and Quentin Cobb from Naughty Dog or Rockstar for the former one, but they're teaming up for whatever this new studio is that Sony are keeping under wraps. But I like that they're sort of cherry picking like the best possible talent.
Yeah, it sounds like they're really investing in the launch of the new console. If you cast your mind back to when the PS4 came out, I want to feel it sort of fell flat.
We had Knack.
It's not like Knack, mate.
We had Knack.
We had Drive Club, which back then wasn't that great.
And even then, that kept getting delayed. It was like
Killzone, which wasn't that great.
Yeah.
But like, so I really feel like they've learned from that. Oh yeah, no, the order was after that wasn't launch.
It's early days. Like the first 6 months of a console is like a launch. Mm-hmm. The launch period.
Yes,
it's like if you go back, actually look at like every game, every console's launch lineup. They're always pretty thin. They're never.
Yeah,
that
for the
good.
Most part, Nintendo tend to like buck the trend. Like we had like Breath of the Wild. On the SNES, it was Mario World or whatever. But like, yeah, most like Sony and Microsoft. I think Sony this gen have realized that they do actually have a mineable first party catalog.
They absolutely. Are the boys. Yeah,
they are. Yeah,
they've been absolutely dominating. So yeah, assumedly they'll be producing something that's like Horizon level or whatever, something that's new that'll turn heads, be something that's we've not seen before based on the likes of the talent that they're sort of picking from. Speaking of new things, Bungie's next thing after splitting from Activision, they've trademarked the name Matter. So it seems that their next game is going to be called Matter, or at least that's a working title.
Is it going to matter? A sci-fi
LOL.
Game? Is it going to be a sci-fi game?
Well, so they've trademarked the name Matter and they've put it in categories 9 and 41, which represent computer video software and online entertainment services. Computer game software. So, assumedly,
is it going to be another loot grind? Because as soon as you said like they've got a new thing, the first thing I thought of was, are they going to go and do another proper single-player campaign, or are they going to go off and do another loot grind?
Well, I think considering like when they split from Activision, which again, you can go check out the video that we did. We did a whole podcast on it about them splitting and what happens next kind of thing. Their reaction behind the scenes was apparently them popping champagne and cheering when they split from Activision.
Yeah.
So, and again, if you read into a little bit more, apparently Bungie were never happy with the deal that they struck with Activision, and they've apparently been wanting to get away since the beginning. So it seems like, yeah, I think they'll go way more down the Halo route, which is, I mean, obviously Microsoft with the Arbiters kind of thing, providing the money back then.
Yeah.
But I think giving like an entire like fresh clean slate, they'll bring across some of the Destiny monetization stuff, but I have to assume that it'll be something.
Well, they might not
lawful.
Do though, because there's always that that unknown as to how much your publisher is actually interfering with those games. I know that you and Jules talked about Call of Duty yesterday and about that. I'm always intrigued as to how much Activision are getting in the way of Treyarch with their game.
Well, it seems like a lot.
But it's like that will go to show like that will show us how Bungie have been like changed since their time with Activision. If they turn around and go, hey, this is our game, because they're self-publishing, aren't they?
Yes.
And they still have that same kind
for now, anyway.
Yeah, they still have that same kind of monetization in there. It's kind of like, oh, you didn't see. Well, seems like it rubbed off on you a bit too much.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the thing with Bungie is that, like, the Bungie of the Halo era, like, they had such a staff. Like, Joseph Staten is an incredible writer who then, he's not even with Bungie anymore. Marty O'Donnell left because they wouldn't use his music for Destiny. And it's like, a lot of the things that make Bungie what Bungie are, aren't necessarily there anymore. But I think they have enough money to sort of, like, throw it back at Joseph Staten's face and be like, come and write another Halo.
Yeah.
And maybe you can do something brilliant. But yeah, I think like going forward, it depends how much like a certain generation know them as the Destiny people versus the Halo people.
Halo was a long time ago.
Yeah. Was it though?
It was.
I mean, Bungie Halo died out with it. Was it three they did last?
They're still alive.
Well, no, you know what I mean.
Yes,
but like, was it three they did last? Was it ODST?
Their last one was Reach. So yeah,
right. So yeah, still quite a while ago.
Yeah,
I remember everyone at school being excited about Reach. So it's like, yeah.
I think they need like a fresh break. I think they're known as the first person like combat studio, but I'm very curious to what they do next. What do you guys want to see if you just had a blank slate picking from the best of Destiny, the best of Halo? What do you think they'll do?
It's called Matter. So I want,
it is called Matter.
I want a physics-based first-person puzzle game like Portal.
That could be interesting.
You asked me.
That's very true.
I mean, when you say Matter, I do think of like a reality-bending like Avatar The Last Airbender kind of style thing.
That kind of fits.
Like a terrain like altering kind of game. But I kind of don't want it to be mega sci-fi. Because they've only done sci-fi, and it's like, you could push the boat. Very true, but they could also push the boat out a little. Because I think the thing is, like, when obviously Destiny was first announced, there was a lot of people looking at it and going, look, it's just Halo.
Yes.
And there's a lot of people, if Matter turned out to be, like, visually the same kind of thing, you look at Halo, you look at Destiny, you look at Anthem, like, visually they're all kind of the same in some respect. If they did the same thing again, then maybe that's, like, come on, you've got this breadth to do something. Do something with it. There's nothing wrong with that. Obviously, as you said, that's what they're good at. Mm-hmm. But like, I feel like with that potential, like that huge amount of potential, they could do anything with it.
I think, something like Destiny and Anthem, there's like this kind of hyper-colored approach to like corporately mandated open world shooters or loot grind shooters. And like, that's kind of the thing that it seems like Far Cry New Dawn's like leaning into. And like, Rage 2 kind of has some of it, but I think they'll retain on the gameplay side. But like, for the logo that they put out for Matter, it's like black text and then just a whole bunch of like yellows and purples and colors exploding behind it.
Yes.
So it kind of seems like they're leaning into that
They're going for the neon,
neon the mass
grunge
market thing.
Yeah.
Which kind of clashes with like the story side of what they've done before, but considering like you were saying about the way that they've sort of stuck to the same basic strand of like space fiction, I always thought that Halo had way more to it than Destiny, which I know Destiny fans will say that the lore is incredibly detailed, but you've kind of got to go searching for it. But Halo is like a hell of a thing, and I think hopefully they can recreate something like that. So maybe when you were saying about a puzzle based thing, that reminds me of the Serious Sam devs did a whole thing called like the Talos Principle.
I've heard a lot about that.
And it's like, what if they just did a massive left swerve and like, that was it's a walking sim, narrative-based shenanigans.
I've heard good things about that game.
Yeah, I never actually played it, but it was meant to be good. So next up is CDPR, CD Projekt Red's Sebastian Stepien has left to go to Blizzard.
Stepien?
And he was the creative director on The Witcher 3. He was one of three creative directors, thank the Lord. Because when I read that, that's like Corey Barlog leaving God of War or something.
Yeah.
But Stepien was one of three creative leads on The Witcher 3, and he's going across to Blizzard. What do you guys think of that? Because that's
surely,
a hell of a creative talent.
Surely most of Cyberpunk is sort of done by now, so it's not like
the game is done.
I hope so.
Surely.
Yeah.
Surely. I mean, it has no release date, but surely.
I think one of the devs said they're currently polishing it.
I don't think we've got to worry about Cyberpunk. I think it's it does sort of say something about what's their next game going
to
be like.
Well, there is that, and like if you have like sort of any tweaks that need doing or dialogue that needs re-recording, like assumedly those the three people that worked on The Witcher and then Cyberpunk are like the brain trust, and two out of three can like finish the project kind of thing. Like when you read it, it's like, oh man, they're losing because Witcher 3 is like this.
Sad, yeah.
Yeah, like Witcher 3 is like this totemic, like massive, important, essential release for the generation. And for anything to slightly go, like to leave that project, I'm like, oh, I hope Cyberpunk is still as good as it looks.
Yeah.
So, like, hopefully. I mean, like, what they've put up so far for 2077 looks really solid. Mm. So, what do you think, release date do you guys think it'll be? Do we maybe think we'll see it this year?
I think we know about it by now. I'd say it could be like one of the last games of the year. It could be like the Super Smash Brothers slot.
I'm trying to think what else is pending for the rest of the year, because we've like the rumors for The Last of Us are that's a June, July type gubbins.
Of course, you've
got like Days Gone and stuff.
I mean, Days Gone's coming soon. The only thing I think of that's definitely the end of this year would you'll have Call of Duty, obviously, in October or November, depending on what they go for. Mm-hmm. Maybe November again, because I don't have Red Dead 2 to deal with.
True.
It's
a bit of a window, though. Like,
yeah, it seems like everything's opened up towards the end of the year, so maybe that's what E3 is being saved for.
To tap into another rumor as well, Martin Nowinski was asked like, what if it's going to work on PS5, and he said like, what, you know, is it being developed for PS5? Is it going to be a launch game, whatever? And he was just saying it's definitely coming to like current hardware, but it's designed with future technology in mind.
I think like, that's okay. Maybe just like echoing the past of like, yeah, here's this game for this console, and then like a few months later we'll just release it again on the next gen, so you don't have to hold back to play the game. I think we're just heading back into that period where developers will be doing two different versions of the game, or four if you're doing a PS4 and Xbox One version and a PC version 5.
It makes me curious about but they're like, in terms of their release schedule, like if they want to wait until next year when the next consoles are supposed to be dropping, then like Cyberpunk is suddenly a launch game or a launch window game, whereas if they get it out at the end of this year, they get to capitalize on the Christmas market and the end of the PS4, which is something that the first Last of Us had.
I don't think the PS4 is like, it still doesn't feel like it's near its end, so I think it would be a business wise to release.
I think that's the thing, like the PS4 still feels like it's, I mean, the Xbox One obviously could do with a bit of a lease of life.
Well, the Xbox One X is stellar.
Yeah.
It's just too expensive. Like, it's not really, like,
it's better
your
than
average,
the Pro. Well, yeah. Hardware-wise, but...
Your average...
I mean, I don't see why Cyberpunk would be a launch title, because it doesn't really tie into any particular developer or publisher. Like, if, for example, Cyberpunk was a PS4 exclusive, could you imagine, like the monopoly that Sony would have?
Oh, they definitely said it's coming to multiple platforms.
Well, exactly, we know it's coming to the big three, as it were, but, like... Yeah, as a launch title, I think that would weirdly narrow CD Projekt's like potential audience base, because not everyone's going to jump on the new generation straight away. Mm-hmm. Even if they do turn around and go, hey, here's Cyberpunk, a game that's like the most anticipated game probably ever that isn't a sequel.
Maybe this generation, so far anyway.
I think as you said, it could be the last thing of this gen, and then, you know, a year down the line, they'll release it for the PS5 as well.
But I think there's a slot to be capitalized on. Like, I mean, if you look at the sales for last year, Red Dead Redemption 2 is like the highest selling new game of that year, only released in, I think, November. So it managed to like outsell the entire year's worth of everything in only those closing months, so it's like there is a very valuable like closing year.
But it's because I think everyone gravitates towards the end of the year. We know that's when game season kicks in, like properly. Even though a lot of stuff seems to be a lot more spread out this year, which is gonna make life a lot easier for us. That's for certain.
You say that, but I mean, as we'll get to Resident Evil 2, there's the Anthem beta, and there's Kingdom Hearts 3 that we have access to, all just arriving on the same
busy
day.
Busy January.
So yeah, the industry's kind of kicked the F back in. But these are all lovely things. Speaking of a not lovely thing, EA have just been set. We'll get to Star Wars. We'll get to Kingdom Hearts.
Star Wars.
What if Star Wars is the one level in Kingdom Hearts that they've yet to reveal?
The Avengers turn up as well.
No way.
Anyway, terrible things. EA have just been out in the news cancelling more Star Wars projects. Now, you can go and check out our coverage of this in separate videos that we've already done, but I wanted to get your guys' thoughts on just the way that EA have handled Star Wars so far, because...
Like crap, to be honest.
It's
Star Wars used to be this massive thing, and now I just feel like they're making a bit of a joke out of it.
They are, to be honest,
I think, I mean, looking at the stuff that got cancelled was a couple of open world games that were only in like a project stage or whatever, in terms of being called Project Orca was one of them, and Project Yuma or something was the other one.
It's just not really good enough. You have the Star Wars, what do you call it?
IP.
The Star Wars IP, essentially. You have LucasArts, essentially. For, 10 years?
Well, you're channeling the old school LucasArts. Yeah, you've got like,
and
you know.
What have they done with it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, they literally, if you pass it out and look at what they've literally done, we've got two Battlefront games and two apps.
Battlefront
was okay, but what would have been good was Knights of the Old Republic 3.
Well, that was the thing that made the news earlier this week, because it turns out that BioWare have tried to get Knights of the Old Republic 3 off the ground multiple times, and EA were the ones who kept knocking it back. That's only according to Jason Schreier, who tweeted saying that he was aware that BioWare had tried multiple times, but there are concept sketches for what they were going to do with Knights of the Old Republic 3, which just didn't come together.
It's such a shame, because EA love money. We know this from their business practices, and it's like, you have an ability to print money. Like, all of these titles that you're making, like the Visceral Star Wars game, like, my goodness, how amazing would that have been? Like, I was really, really hyped for Battlefront 2. Was it nearly 2 years ago now? Or a year ago?
Yeah, 2 years. 3 years.
And I remember when it first came out and everyone was like, oh, everything sucks. Mm-hmm. Like, I've completely lost interest. And now I still haven't played it. I will get it.
I think the story had, like, promise. And then I didn't like that they moved away.
The ending, though.
No, I didn't like that they moved away from the Empire stuff.
Because I wanted that single-player portion of it because I'm not a massive, massive multiplayer person. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they're canceling all of these incredible-sounding games is either them just being downright stupid, or when I heard of this news coming out, this could be them thinking, well, we're about to lose the license. We know this. Like, we can't say that we're losing it, so we're just gonna stop everything that's currently happening.
I don't know. But the thing is, you would cash out. Like, you wouldn't just, like, give up. And it's like, I don't think that they're being stupid. I think they're just being too scrutinous of, like, specific, like, methodologies towards the games that they're making, specific formulas. It's like, this needs to be this type of game. And then you looked at the backlash to Battlefront 2, and it's like, oh man, we had a loot grind plan, so let's kind of gut that from this thing and change it around. And, like, when Visceral went under, that project was handed over to EA Vancouver, who took over and tried to sort of, like, they called it pivoting the design from Amy Hennig's linear Uncharted style story thing to an open world, assumedly loot grind shooter, but even that got cancelled as well. So it's like, you know, in the wake of Battlefront 2, I guess they just kind of went back and said, well, actually, we can't even do this money focused stuff that we want to do, and everything just kind of fell apart. So yeah,
it doesn't make sense, does it?
No, and it's not the best way to treat, like you said, like, it should be so easy to make the most money.
They've got all these studios. It's like, just everyone make a Star Wars game, do something different, cater to literally every part of the audience.
So they that there's a smaller Star Wars game coming in the future. They said it'll probably tie in with the next, like, console cycle.
A smaller Star Wars game.
So it's like, I'm assuming something story based.
A mobile port.
Maybe. I mean, you've got Episode 9 coming later this year, and then, like, that's kind of.
We didn't get anything for Episode 8, though. I was gutted. Like, when I first played Lego. When I first played Lego Star Wars Force Awakens.
Are you a Last Jedi fan?
Yes.
The hell?
But
carry on.
Like, yeah, Lego Star Wars Force Awakens. Did you play it?
Yes, I agree. That was the only Force Awakens
it's
thing.
It's fantastic, and I loved it. Yeah. And I was so gutted when it turned out they weren't doing a Lego Star Wars game for Episode 8. As much as Episode 8 was like,
let's be honest.
Yeah, but like,
you mean you would not do a Last Jedi game? I don't know what levels you would do.
No way.
Well, exactly. I think that's probably why it's like there wasn't really much to it.
Yeah.
But I still would have loved it, especially if Traveler's Tales or TT Games just poke fun at the film, even if they do it like they go back and do it like they did with the original Star Wars games,
the silent cutscenes,
yeah,
that would have been great if you had Luke with his little Lego milk.
Well, he's drinking the Lego milk.
If he just goes there and he's just sort of like squirting this like Lego milk udder, and then like
I could just see how they would do it. It would be like Luke with like a tap attached to it, and he just screws it, or he pulls the handle and he's there filling his thing up.
He's got like a whole crate full of different bottles he's gonna sell around the island. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing. We've had this weird, like, I don't know. I wrote a whole article on, literally called "Why the Magic of Star Wars Is Gone," because I think that has the magic of that as a franchise is gone. Yes, available on WhatCulture.com. Because I think that the overall, it just everything feels really corporatized. I think it's mainly because we get to see a window into the production of everything, and the production qualms are just like laid bare. Like, Solo didn't do very well, and we we knew it wasn't going to do very well in the lead up to it. And then on the game side, like you said, they haven't cashed in on
nothing.
Force Awakens, Last Jedi. You've got all these big surges of popularity like around the brand that they just didn't have games ready for. Well, they had Battlefront, but it's multiplayer
and
focused.
And just doing let's do a DLC for a game that nobody really wants to play to tie in with the films. It's like,
And the ultimate thing it resulted in was just like a couple of levels or whatever, which just isn't really enough to sort of like cash in on the right time period. Anyway, Resident Evil is coming to TV. Netflix have signed a Resident Evil TV show.
Who saw that coming?
I mean, it makes sense, I guess, because the Mia Jovovich movies have just like died a death. They did Final Chapter a couple
the
of years
movie
back.
Was good.
Oh, they're all brilliant. They're all terrible, but they're all brilliant. So yeah, who do you guys think they're going to cast? Because they haven't said anything other than a Resident Evil Netflix show is coming.
Which characters are in it?
No, they did say part of the statement that it'll focus on the dark inner workings of Umbrella Corporation and a new world order caused by the outbreak. So that kind of ties in with the Resident Evil Extinction-esque timeline, if you went off the movies, like in terms of everything's gone to hell, everyone's been eaten, and then how does humanity survive after that?
Could they just do something completely separate, like do a whole new thing? Kind of, when I think of it...
I don't think it'll be tied to the movies.
Going back to the original, like if you're saying it's going back to like the origin of the outbreak and stuff, think of like a Gotham-style thing, but Resident Evil maybe?
I mean,
I don't know Resi that well.
There's a lot of lore for them to mine, like in terms of where the virus comes from, and like I don't know, the establishment of like Wesker, like the big series villain kind of thing, like because they did it in some of the movies. Have you guys seen the schlocky as hell movies?
I've not played any of them. I've not seen
the
any
living
of them.
Hell, Rich.
Sorry,
I'm gonna get the
Resident Evil 2?
I'm tempted to play the demo.
The best.
I might play
game
the demo over the weekend.
Of the month. But yeah, so like they had so much like schlocky material that they sort of dove into in the movies where it was like, these are the mad scientists creating this weird virus. No, it's a zombie virus, but they actually want to experiment on the people. So that's kind of what they want to do. And then that results in all these different monsters and everything else. So I think for the TV series, they can pass all that stuff out. You'll probably get a main character who like works for Umbrella and you'll have someone on the other side. But it's like, it's the main cast. I mean, you've seen enough of them to know the main cast, I think. Like Leon, Chris, or whoever. So who would you want to see starring? Because who I don't know who you could hang it on that would be able to, like, you could put on the posters.
Matthew Broderick as Leon Kennedy.
He could be the new super nervous Leon that's in the new game. But I don't know who else you could sort of hang it on.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
But whatever.
I'm sure it'll be an interesting casting with a weird wig. Cough, cough.
Maybe. I mean, they can't do worse than the way that it went towards the end. Like, the last chapter was actually bad. Like, not even enjoyable bad. It was just a bad movie. And they've done so many other, like, supernatural characters zipping to and fro and, like, slowing bullets down and whatever. So there's a lot of, like, stupid, schlocky stuff that they can get into. But I kind of wonder if Capcom are, like, sort of changing the general, like, perception of Resident Evil at the minute. Like, Resi 7 was a more grounded...
It's definitely changing.
Yeah, they're trying to get back to their horror roots, and I think they totally lost that with Resi 5 and 6. So hopefully no boulder punching in this show.
That's exciting, actually.
Although I'd probably kind of go for some boulder punching.
But in real life, though?
Yeah.
Real boulder.
If you can find a dude who's the same stature as Chris Redfield circa Resident Evil 5.
To be fair, he has legs for arms.
It's ridiculous. He's literally like Scott Steiner, which is a sort of old wrestling reference. But man's, yeah, his arms are as big as his head. So yeah, so we've got the new Resident Evil Netflix show coming, but who knows as to who they'll cast or how they'll sort of frame it. But yeah, next up I've got, I've just written Anthem down on here. So we've been checking out all the gameplay reveals and stuff. Hopefully they can pull it around, because I feel for BioWare in a big way. Mass Effect's one of my favorite franchises. And now that the beta is open for Anthem, we managed to get a code, but we're not going to get to play it until across the weekend. But looking at the gameplay that has been shown this morning, what do you guys think from what's been revealed?
I don't really feel anything. That's the thing. I wanted to like it because I just love everything. Mm-hmm. But I really wanted to like it because I love any game that lets you just fly a boot.
Okay.
It's fair. Yeah. Yeah.
And that does seem really fun. The air and water traversal seems really fun. However, uh-huh. I have heard from people who have been playing the beta that you can only fly for like 15 seconds. It's not
infinite. Oh.
And you need to let it recharge and stuff like that. So okay. Even that, the one thing I was interested in sounds like it's constrained and boring.
I nigh on.
It's shown off in a very, very, like,
this is
over the top way in
not.
Like E3.
I
misleading, basically.
The best bits for the trailer.
Yeah, yeah, of course. I nigh on guarantee that you can buy a plus 2% flight pack upgrade. I'm just guessing that entire system will be in there. Where it'll just be
the thing for me with that game is like, because I've played a bit of Destiny and I don't understand the appeal of it. I genuinely
love Destiny.
The shooting is excellent. Mm-hmm. I won't, don't get me wrong.
That's
but the
that's literally it. Like,
the rest of the game, I'm like, what is this game? I think that was when. I feel like that was when people like Ubisoft looked at these things and thought, hey, we can just make games a service mm-hmm. and like we can just like make everything really big and bloated and just like kind of empty at the same time and mm-hmm. just monetize the hell out of it. And because I got it for free. Right. I got Destiny 2 for free
after, you're still like, this is
after
not
the
good.
State of BlizzCon. Uh-huh. They gave it away for free on PC. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, this is eh. So like Anthem... I feel so bad for BioWare. Mm. Like, I've not played Mass Effect either, but I know how much...
Rich
I know...
Man.
All right, stop it.
Oh.
Like, I know
kills
how...
me with the words.
I know how big of a deal Mass Effect is to a lot of people, and
love
it sucks to see that, like, EA are pulling BioWare away from what they know and what they do mm. and making them do other stuff. It's like, yeah, you've made quality games, therefore you can make a quality game in this sense.
Yeah. And
it's like taking away one of our editors here and saying, hey, you can edit a feature film. It's like, nah.
That's the thing. I think that approach would result in something like Suicide Squad, where it's just sort of like, do the most poppy, like mass mainstream thing possible. And then
I feel like with Anthem, I'm expecting reviews to be like, mechanically, it plays really, really well. The mm-hmm. shooting's really good. The mm-hmm. flying's really good from what you can do with it. But then the rest of it is like, it's just an empty, hollow husk of
well,
a game.
The thing that they
EA are just assuming you'll play because it's another Destiny.
Yeah, I mean, like for me, like I'm so curious as to how much BioWare is in this or how much EA is in this. Mm. And like, yeah, looking at the gameplay reveal, watching it just be played, the whole world that you go back to just seems completely lifeless, which really sucks because one of the things that they always got across the most was this feeling of like in-depth lore and different characters and races and a reason to live in this world. And the one that they've got in Anthem, and it won't be patched in time for release because they can't patch a whole animation system in, mm-hmm. but you've just literally got like static characters in a hub world that you're walking between. It's literally what No Man's Sky was like when you went to different colonies there.
But it's like in
and I love No Man's Sky, but still.
Like
yeah, exactly. I mean, they added a hell of a lot more to it. They never actually added like AI scripting pathways or anything. But
I
still,
I hope it is good because I know a few people who are excited for it. And just to be honest, there's loads of different types of gamers.
Yeah.
And just because we're not excited for it doesn't mean it's not.
I mean, if you're a person that's still playing Destiny 2 religiously, then you're probably going to be well away with this game. But
yeah, I mean, well, the thing is, like, I liked a lot of Mass Effect Andromeda mainly because I adore Mass Effect enough that I could paper over the cracks with an intense love of Mass Effect. And I think that the general like third person gameplay in that was brilliant. Like that's BioWare been working towards really solid. Like, you know, third person combat for a while.
2016,
yeah. 16. I think, anyway. And but even Mass Effect 3's combat is solid. It was just like, obviously, the story stuff was a complete mess, but like, the end of it was. But like, they've always had this really good, solid gameplay framework. And it's like, if that's all you want from Anthem, then obviously they're going to deliver on that.
Yeah.
But I think, considering it's BioWare, it's a humongous missed opportunity to not back that up with a worthwhile story. And so, like, when they did their presentation at E3 and they were like doing this whole them on chairs being asked different stuff, they really looked so tired.
Faces like slapped asses.
They just look, yeah, and like you kind of can't blame them if they've just been asked to do like the most money hungry thing.
I feel like because you're drawing parallels between Anthem and Destiny. Like, imagine if BioWare ended up being split from EA because of it, and they're popping champagne in the background as well, which I'm sure they probably
well,
would
that's
be.
The thing. And I imagine they look across the pond and look at what is happening to Bungie, and it's just sort of like, yeah, like that could be us.
Oh,
kind
why
of
can't
thing.
We? Do, are they owned by EA though?
They signed a deal with them, I think. I haven't dove into the specifics of their contract.
Okay, because I'm gonna say because like everything they've done has been EA basically, hasn't it? Like Mass Effect and stuff.
Yeah, actually, yeah, because
so maybe they are owned by EA.
Yeah, the further you go back, you can't get. Yeah, you just can't get like because even Dragon Age and the first Mass Effect was still EA. It's just
maybe they are owned by EA. way. Or
yeah,
they
I think
just,
so.
In their publisher, yeah.
Or they're just like super partners.
I think I think it's at the point now though where like someone, because EA and Activision are the two biggest, like sort of, they feel like they have the worst reputations right now and they're the most money hungry publishers.
Or maybe they'll just pull like 2/3 of Infinity Ward and just leave. And just go and make, well, go I, make I mean, the BioWare equivalent to Respawn.
I think the future of, I don't know, like, looking at Anthem, it's sad because like obviously there's a lot of rumors on if this doesn't land, are EA going to be EA and kill them as well? And so like there's a possibility where that's entirely the case, but BioWare have such a strong fan base. Like people still watch the live streams for N7 Day every year, like November 7th, where they say something about Mass Effect all the time. All they need to do is sever the ties. Obviously Mass Effect belongs to EA, but do something
but that's
new
the thing, you know,
people will go to it.
Hence why like loads of people moved off Call of Duty to go to Titanfall, because it was Respawn, because it was basically Infinity Ward.
Yeah.
Like they could easily do that again, and I think people will go with them.
Titanfall was
yeah. stellar.
Yeah.
But then that got bought by EA. It's just like Titanfall 3 is like going to be the EA
version.
Well,
maybe that's just what's going to happen with, because I remember pitching this idea to you about whether more big studios owned by like the big publishers are going to separate themselves off and become self publishing, or they go to someone like Devolver, who Devolver seem to give a crap about games.
Devolver are immaculate at picking specific topics and managing to get the word out about them. I mean, even they tweeted when the whole EA Star Wars thing was going on, they tweeted the official EA account, the official Disney account, and just said, "Give us Star Wars, we'll have a go."
Yeah,
just, as if like they'll just find
one
of their
studios. Or unless like the Devolver, all of their studios that are in bed with them, and then all these new studios that might form out of the big publishers being all greedy, maybe they will turn around and make their own publisher and go, "Ha!
Well, that's
now we're
going
to take
like,
this on with you."
Yeah, me and Jules did a whole thing yesterday about like how the very idea of like this really over the top corporate greed could be dying, or at least there's a lot of things that are happening sequentially that seem to be fracturing that like that business relationship. And this generation really showed how much those companies can just kind of nickel and dime the consumer, make us pay for DLC, make us pay for siphoned off chunks of stories, or just have microtransaction systems that feel really ugly. And there is a way to counter that with crowdfunding or with certain fandoms that can, you know, literally connect straight to the developers and stuff and just go straight with that. And so I kind of think that going forward, that probably is a viable way to go, because the only real thing that someone like EA offers is reach. And it's just sort of like everyone knows the EA brand, but if that brand is
The brand has been in the toilet for the past like 10 years.
Yeah, and it's just so. Like obviously the amount of money EA has to reach people, like whether it's algorithmically or through marketing campaigns or whatever, that's the trade-off. And so like, but then when you sign up with them, it's like, actually we want this.
It's like, here you go, we're gonna, it's like the classic like TV boardroom in Simpsons or Family Guy.
Yeah.
But it's like, we're gonna take this out and replace it with a talking dog.
And it's just like, yeah, like that's the thing. And I always question how realistic that assumption of them is, because it's a very cartoonified version of business. But then you read Kotaku's behind the scenes reports and it's like, yep, they literally had meetings where they said, rip this thing out, put this.
Well, you
in,
just look at the games themselves and think, God, you couldn't see a developer putting all these man hours into this game just to try and bleed the player dry.
Yeah.
As I said, it's always the unknown as to how much the publishers are getting in the way of the developers.
So, do you see yourselves playing Anthem?
No.
I am, because I got a beta code.
No.
But that's kind of my thing. Are you just shaking the head?
Too many games that I'm really excited for and want to play this year. I'm sorry I won't be playing.
Exactly.
That is more than fair. Another thing I've got noted down here is how Activision was sued by their public shareholders because they completely failed to tell their shareholders that Bungie were going to be splitting from them, which was another massive blow against the whole
world. Pretty big news.
It's a rather big deal.
Why didn't you tell?
Well, that's the thing. And like we mentioned before that like Bungie apparently haven't been happy with their deal with Activision since the beginning. So assumedly that just wasn't conveyed to shareholders, and they would say, no, everything's fine, they're going to keep making Destiny, everything's fine, and then the next day they just completely split. It wouldn't be as cut and dry as that, but still, like it's a massive blow to them. So feel free to check the video on that. It's the one that me and Jules did yesterday. The next thing up I've got is Days Gone, which got a whole chunk of gameplay, which seems to finally be turning the tide on like the general perception of it.
Yes.
Your eyes seem to say that you like the look of it.
I have a lot to say about this video that I've just watched this morning, and this game looks scary.
Really scary.
It looks scary.
I would know the action route, but
it
cool.
It is. Like, well, yeah, action. I'm scared of life, so.
Fair.
I'm scared of everything.
Very fair.
But yeah, just wow. I've never actually played a zombie game. Mm-hmm. Oh, the freakers, they're calling them.
Yeah,
he's like, don't call them zombies. Like, I thought of zombies, man.
I've never played a game where it's literally been more about tactics than it has about just shooting.
Just killing stuff. Yeah.
I haven't. I'm sure they exist. I'm sure they're out there. But
that's a really good point, though, because.
Yeah.
I was watching it and I was like, God, like, I am very much like just running there.
Yep.
And I'll make it up as I go along, but this looks really tactical, and you actually have to use your environment, and it seems very immersive.
Yeah.
Altogether, very unrealistic, but it looks really fun.
I just with that big kind of like, because that was a story mission that we saw. Yes. It's like, it looked like a set piece. Like, I'm hoping that stuff like that is going to be few and far between, because I feel like if I come up to a story mission, I'll see that same, like, oh, here's all these trenches, here's all these bubbles, here's a giant swarm, and I go, I don't want to do this again.
I think the thing that they've missed the trick on, like, because that's the, until this was at PAX where they showed off like a bunch of main missions and stuff, and we got more of an idea of what the moment to moment gameplay is like, because everything they showed off before was just main dude who has the best name ever. It's like Deacon St. John. Freaking DJ. And he sounds great. And like, I mean, I was like, if you have a name like that, you need a really cool game.
Yeah.
I don't want to. I don't want to
have a motorcycle.
He does. I don't want the game.
Certified cool dude.
I don't want the game being upstaged by his own jacket though. I need to have more to it. But yeah. So like, but until now, all we saw was big old hordes and man emptying clip into hordes. And it's like, if this is all this is, there's not enough to it.
Yeah. It didn't really feel like anything new.
Because I remember
after seeing that, I feel like it might have an edge.
I remember when I first saw the trailer of Days Gone, I didn't have a PS4, and that was the point when I thought, I want a PS4.
Really?
Yeah.
Just the whole tech.
Just generally just the game itself. I thought, God, this looks really good.
Okay.
And I think as time went on, it started to lose like a lot of momentum with me. It got to the point where I was like, I don't care about this game. And I'm really sad because I did care about this game. And now I'm seeing more of the gameplay stuff. I am keen to try it.
Yeah.
But there's still just a few little bits and pieces about like watching the gameplay today that's like, oh, the UI looks really bit rubbish in my opinion. Some of the animation looks a bit janky. And
they've had to take a hit on the animation for the sake of the amount of bodies that are
I get that. But then when I'm playing through things like Spider-Man and God of War, and you think how incredible the character animations are, whereas in this there's a point in it where he throws a grenade, he turns around and he turns back again, and generally there's about 3 frames of animation for the grenade and about 2 for when he turns around. I'm thinking, this looks like an alpha footage. The UI looks like alpha footage, in my opinion.
I didn't even notice that
stuff. There were 300 zombies.
I'll give them that.
In this pit.
I would absolutely give them that.
If you had like 60 frames a second of character animation for each of them.
I think it's worth, like, because that's the thing. The tactical side that I've seldom shown off is that, like, you literally come into a big old, like, combat scenario, bunch of zombies in this one place. Zombie figure, I don't care, zombies. You go to this one place, and there's something to retrieve in the middle of it. So you've kind of got, like, you have different distractions. You kind of want to lead the horde in certain directions, which they did mention before, but that ties in with which traps you have. And, like, because the one that we watched had, he'd basically laid down a whole bunch of explosives, and then when they went off,
environment to your advantage,
it was, like, 20 bodies just, like, scattered all around. And I was like,
I'm really quite looking forward to trying it out. I think there's just, I'm concerned, like, mechanically it's going to feel really a bit rubbish.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because, I mean, I don't know what about the story in Days Gone? I genuinely don't know
zombies,
what that's going to be. I think that's going to be the big clincher, because that was a story mission we saw. There is obviously some kind of story, and we don't know what that is
yet. I have faith in Sony Bend on the story side too.
That's fair enough. The fact that if this was an Xbox exclusive or like just a cross-platform game, I probably wouldn't really care. Xbox mainly because I don't have one, and the Microsoft store on PC is awful.
Yes,
that burn.
But I think because it's PS4, I think it does have a bit. I do have a bit more faith in it because it's like they have that money, they have that talent, and this could be a really incredible game that everyone just sort of lost interest in. It went under the radar. Maybe they announced it too early. Maybe
a lot of people just thought it was Last of Us without the story.
Yeah,
and that's kind of what I thought it was too. And like, it's only since I've actually like really watched the more tactical side of it. I don't know how much that dominates every like the main thread.
I mean, I'm hoping it doesn't.
See, I hope it does because it differentiates.
More like those massive set pieces that I don't want to have too many of. Because I will get to the point when I go, oh, I've got to do this again.
And that's the thing. If that end becomes too repetitive, where every one of those scenarios is the same
down tracks. Basically turning Days Gone into Just Cause 2, where every big mission's the same.
There is that. Just Cause 2 was very good for a time.
It was, though.
So, for the last thing, I just put down what we play in. But we've almost run out of time. So, you could tell us about Kingdom Hearts 3, because you're playing
Kingdom Hearts 3.
The biggest deal in the world.
It is such a big deal to me. This is a series that I had back on the PlayStation 2, and I just love them so much. Like, and 3 is perfect. Honestly, I'm writing the review. Keep an eye out. Hopefully get it out on Monday.
Yes.
And I am struggling to find something I don't like. Because every time I find something and I think, oh, this is a bit slow. It's a very gentle beginning, to put it that way. Every time I think, oh, this is a bit slow, I think to myself, but there is so much to this game. It is infamous for being convoluted, complicated. The combat is all over the place, but it feeds it to you very slowly.
You were saying as well that in the opening they reference stuff from the mobile games,
yes,
which is insane.
I can't really talk about the story much, but put it this way: the first cutscene, the first thing you see, has a reference in it to the flipping mobile game. Who's played the mobile game? It's very good, by the way.
All 5 of you are losing your minds.
I was like, that's whoa! this is Kingdom Hearts 3. I thought it would be following on from 2, but no.
It follows on from Dream Drop.
Every single game matters, and it's incredible fan service, but it's also, I realise, very intimidating. So basically, I'm looking at, can you go straight into this one as a veteran and also as a newcomer? So that's what I'm sort of looking at.
I think that's the thing, because, I mean, when was Kingdom Hearts 2? Like, over 10 years ago?
2 was 2009.
Okay, so yeah, it's like about a decade-ish. It feels like a long time anyway, and there's been many releases.
Was it like 2005?
It was a long time ago. I'm thinking
the fact that we don't know kind of shows that it was a while. But anyway, I think that's what they've had to grapple with quite a lot, is like just how much is it going to work for a newcomer or not. And like considering that they had a really cool little thing, which you might as well mention, is that when you first put it in, it's 5 gigs for the first world.
Yeah, do games normally do?
No, that's, well, not the way
A lot of games do, where you can install so much and it says playable from here and then it will do the rest of it in the background.
Yeah, but so many games say that, and then when you actually get there, it's a menu saying still installing, and you just sit on.
But I mean, the fact that is great,
because in Kingdom Hearts,
sometimes games do let you do that, which is fantastic.
Yeah, I think this. Well, from what I've hardly ever seen any games that actually live up to that promise. Like Mortal Kombat gives you a one-on-one fight, but and that's fine. And Mortal Kombat 10.
It gives you the whole first. Well, most of the first world. Didn't manage to get past the bit that's still downloading, but because it turned the internet off. But anyway,
you've been a super games journalist, and you were like, because we got told that we can play it, but you can't say certain things. And then
no one
will know. But then nothing was downloading, so you were still stuck on the first world.
So yeah, but basically, like as far as the first world goes, it's
pretty good.
Really good.
Yeah. Okay, that's good.
I cried.
I imagine you went into it crying and then only cried more because it's beautiful.
The first cutscene is it's almost like a summary, very abstract summary, and you start watching it and you're like,
You started telling me and Rich about how Sora's lost his heart and then his clone and
I compared it to the intro of Kingdom Hearts 2 and Kingdom Hearts 1, which are both very slow. You start off not really doing anything exciting, let's be honest.
Do you get your gummy ship?
You're at least 5 hours in before you get your gummy ship in Kingdom Hearts 2. Well,
that's what I want my gummy ship.
But apparently the gummy ship is very, very good in 3. I haven't got that far yet.
I don't even know what it is.
It's
I played the first one and I remember the gummy ship. That was back in 2002 or whatever it was.
It was terrible in the first one.
Yeah.
Better in the second one, and now it's even better in the third one. Apparently.
Okay. Well.
But yeah, it's very, very complicated storylines. Dive in if you dare.
Hopefully you'll have unpacked the noodle pile that is Kingdom Hearts 3 by Monday or at your earliest convenience, and we'll tell the people as to whether it's good.
Yeah.
We will see. But yes, thank you guys all very much for listening to us. I'm Scott from the What Culture Gaming Podcast, joined by Rich.
Thank you for listening / watching.
And joined by Rich.
Nice to see you.
And we'll catch you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
Kayla Itzinas. I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.